Welcome to
the session entitled Superfluous People Are Unproductive People, with Betty and Paul Picard. You'll be pleased to know that today it's mostly with Betty Picard. Betty and I are both faculty members of Florida State University. Her field is social work and mine is political science. And where our fields intersect, we think we run across many of the issues of Christian social responsibility that we all share an interest in. And we hope by exploring these some of these areas with you and sharing ideas among us that we'll all go away with some new slant on it. Do you have any new people here, people who are with us for the first time this afternoon? You're very welcome, both of you. We're glad to see you. We've been telling everybody for the last 10 days how glad we are to be here. And we hope that it's going to be as great an experience for you as it has been for us.
Well, we're glad the other people are here, too. I mean, we're always glad to have returners. The topic for this afternoon is kind of an outgrowth of last week, which was the deserving and undeserving poor. And we felt that we got really good response from that. I don't think we came to any conclusions, but the reason that we called this this superfluous people, which Jim Fisher is having a little trouble getting out this noon, at least at our setting, there's a film which at FSU I showed it to students, and it's called Superfluous People. Now I just wanted to ask before we get started, have you any idea who are superfluous people? Are any people superfluous? Who'd you get? All right, that's a good point. You're getting close. Anybody else? Who else might be superfluous? A donkey.
Long live retarded.
All right, Right. Well, I'd say, a whole slew of handicapped people. Okay, now. How about that? And children superfluous?
Boy, that's really hard, isn't it?
How could any of us say that children are superfluous? But what do all these groups have in common? There's some other groups too, but I don't want to put this on forever. What do all these groups have in common?
Dependency.
Yeah. Dependency in a way. What is dependent on that?
Yeah. None for care, support, none for death.
Right. 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 So our question is, are non-productive people really productive? We have this thing called the Protestant work ethic or the Stuart method, whatever you want to call it. But what's the basic premise of that? Some of you have heard of that before, haven't you? What does it say? What are we all called on to do?
Work.
You bet.
Our mind is the devil's program.
Right. Right. But as we will see, that depends on who you are and how unproductive you are, in what way, and for whom, and to whom, and so on and so forth. But anyway, before we get into all that, I would like to read you, because this is Golden Village, and I wouldn't do this if I did you, a little scripture here. This is from Luke 6, and I'm sure you'll recognize it. Jesus looked at his disciples and said, "Happy are you poor. The kingdom of God is yours. Happy are you who are hungry now. You will be filled. Happy are you who weep now. You will laugh. Happy are you when men hate you and reject you and insult you and say that you are evil because of the Son of Man. Be happy when that happens. And dance for joy, for a great reward is kept for you in heaven. For their ancestors did the same thing to the prophets. But how terrible for you who are rich now. You have had your easy life. How terrible for you who are full now. You will go hungry. How terrible for you who laugh now. You will mourn and weep. How terrible when all men speak well of you. For their ancestors said the very same thing to the false prophets." Well, that's not very nice to hear, is it? I'd rather not. Paul was meddling with the scriptures this summer, and he put together another set of Beatitudes. We Catholics call them Beatitudes. I don't know if you do or not. Anyway, let me read you the new modern Beatitudes. Blessed are the warriors, for they shall have parades, glory, and veterans' preference. Blessed are the wealthy, for they shall have comfort and influence. Blessed are those who lust after power, for innocent people will be their victims. Blessed are the greedy, for they shall grasp more than their share. Blessed are the bright and able, for they shall be envied. Blessed are the strong, for they shall take what they want. Blessed are the crafty, for they shall make their own laws. Blessed are the beautiful, for they shall be courted. Blessed are the hard of heart, for they shall not be moved by compassion to share with those in trouble. Blessed are those for whom the rules are written, for they shall win the game. Blessed are those who scorn feelings and aesthetics, for efficiency shall bring them great advantage. Well, which do you like better? Well, why?
Yeah, well, I guess my question is, which is more in keeping with the American way of life?
That's more modern. I have to say that. I think that one of the things I'd like you to think about for just a minute is, besides those groups that we named previously, who are they? The old, the very young, the handicapped, mentally, physically, emotionally handicapped. Who else are unproductive people in our society? Can you think of any other people who are unproductive?
I think some of the very wealthy.
Oh, really? How do they get by with it?
Yeah, because they're not invisible.
They're not invisible. Well, some of them are pretty visible, aren't they?
Yes, but some really, reap the benefits of that wealth, but don't really miss it.
Right. Some of them, I guess, clip coupons. I've never quite understood what this coupon clipping is, but I gather that that's the way some people live. And it doesn't sound too productive to me.
On the back of turtle box.
I don't believe that makes you living. but you're right. You're right. Certainly some wealthy. Even more specifically, and this I have some difficulty with because I'm as feminist as anybody. Who particularly?
From the poor single parent. Yeah. Poor
Asian type. Oh, okay. All right. Right. Now that's another good point. We're getting off this other bit, but yeah. Okay. Now, why are they unproductive? Why are single parents unproductive? What do you mean unproductive?
Well, they're getting welfare checks.
Okay, they're getting welfare checks. They're dependent. There's somebody back there saying dependent, right? And who do they depend on?
Our taxes.
Boy, that's what we don't like. Okay, what?
You didn't finish your point about the wealthy women.
No, I didn't. In fact, I didn't even say women. But I think you could see that's what was coming. Right. If you are a wealthy woman in our society, you don't have to do much of anything, do you? You don't have to raise children. I'm going to get back to that in a minute. You don't have to earn your living. What do you do to, what is your product?
Volunteer work.
Well, maybe, Emily, and that's their salvation, and I'm not knocking that. I think we need lots of volunteers in our society. But there are lots and lots of people who don't do any volunteer work.
Who is that?
Well, right, they play green, they play golf. I guess golf is at least something. I mean, they're muscles. I suppose you could say bridge players are using their brains, I don't know. But you really have to stretch it some to say that those people are very productive. And yet, we're not nearly as judgmental about them, are we, as about this lady's friends, the single parents. So how funny is that? What's that trouble? Yeah.
Well, they may not be personally productive as an individual, but I would imagine that they are using their dollars to plowing it into industries such as that and
make
other people
productive. Yeah, where do
they get their dollars? What do they get? Well, probably from the industry they plowed it into.
Yeah, but they themselves.
Well, maybe. Well, I suppose you're referring to inheritance.
Well, I guess. I'm even pushing it a step further. I'm saying that in our society, it's perfectly all right for women to marry men who have either made their own money or inherited or something, so that the women are just, you know.
I thought the women control the majority of the wealth.
And vice versa.
And vice versa what?
Yeah. The guy marries the woman for her money.
Oh, well now we're getting to a new wrinkle, and I think that this is probably going to be more and more the case. But in the past, at least traditionally, women marry and have an opportunity to use what their husbands produce more or less as they see fit. Now, see, when we look at a lot of us, we say, well, I don't exactly think that's the case. I mean, I've done as much as anybody else in helping to raise this man's family and so on and so forth. I feel that I've done my share. And I'm not talking about those people. I think that women who make homes, raise children, are very productive. Mm-hmm. And that's why I have a little trouble with criticism of AFDC mothers. See, we're really schizophrenic in this country about the value of children. Our children, yes. Other people, well, I'm not so sure. Because the reason that we have AFDC at all, the reason that we have any kind of plan for mothers to take care of their children, I don't care whether they're single or not single, but we said a long time ago, 1909 or something like that, that in this country, no child can be deprived of a home because of lack of funds. So we took a long time getting around to it to put that into effect. But that was the idea, that children should have a family, that families should be allowed to bring up their own children, and so if necessary, if there was no other arrangement, then the rest of us through our taxes, would provide for those families. Now, do you see a problem with that? Do you see some reason why we couldn't do that?
I'm the people that take advantage of it, wouldn't they?
Of course. And if you can find any group of people in this whole world who don't take advantage of something, I don't know where you can look for it. But why would you pick that particular group? Why did they take advantage more than? I mean, what are some of the other kinds of things that we do with our taxes? Anybody got some other ideas about what our taxes are? Okay, that's a good point. Right. Some of them are not very productive, are they? No, I wouldn't say sitting in the cell for year after year is very productive. Right. And we subsidize them with our taxes, don't we?
Yeah, let me ask you to clarify your point a little further, because you could be moving in either direction. I'd like you to tip your hand a little further. Are you saying, well, what's an alternative to keeping a prisoner? So you're leaning towards making the prisoner more productive. Mm-hmm. You're not talking about just getting rid of them.
I think they're productive right now.
There's another point of view, just plain vindictive towards criminals, which which resents spending any money on them at all, and,
oh, no.
And advocates a very harsh treatment of them to the point
sometimes
of...
Sometimes in prison, you know, they learn to be productive. Sometimes there are things that are accomplished in prison, but some
people. Well, thank you for clarifying that.
Great. I'm trying to remember, where was that now? If we choose to think of what we do with our taxes in terms only of doing things with them that nobody will take advantage of. Wasn't that your term, take advantage of? Yeah, well, now let's look at this. I beg your pardon?
We spend millions on schools that everybody takes advantage of.
Good point, yeah, I'm glad you thought of that. Right. And we really don't we don't wonder, most of us, whether it's all right to spend tax money for schools.
We got to admit that we're both paid by the taxpayers of the state of Florida, largely out of the Florida sales tax. We have no income tax in Florida, no inheritance tax in Florida. It's a good place to come and retire, but we do have a sales tax. And that's very largely what pays our salaries. Now, the irony of this is that there's only one class of people in Florida that are hurt by the sales tax, for people like us in the middle class with a respectable income. The sales tax is no burden at all. It's an extra 4 cents on a dollar. It's annoying, but it's not burdensome. But there are a lot of poor people in the state of Florida for whom that extra 4 cents on a dollar is burdensome. They are living on the margin, and that margin is reduced by 4%. Well, the sales tax isn't across the board, so it isn't quite that bad, but the sales tax does hurt them. And these just happen to be the people who can't get their kids into our universities. So who's taking advantage of whom? We run a welfare educational system in which we provide at the taxpayer's expense benefits for people who could afford to pay for their own. And I don't hear people bitching about taking advantage. Who's being taken advantage of in Florida? Now, I don't want to tell you how you're doing things here in Washington. Most of you are from Washington this week, I think. Minnesota, some of you. I won't tell you how you're doing it, but you can see how we're doing it. So, what is this? I think Betty just keeps running into this all the time in her work of people who feel that from the bottom of the heap in this country, the people who have the least in this country, the people who get the least out of being Americans, who do get, in some cases, a trickling of below subsistence level welfare benefits, are taking advantage of the rest of it.
Unfortunately, that's something we hear about often. You know, we don't hear a lot about where our money is being spent. I work for the state of Washington, and I read a list one day of all the research projects for which people are receiving federal and state monies. I was appalled. I wish I could remember some of the ridiculous subjects, but it might have been very interesting to the person doing it, but didn't mean hell against it, anybody else. And what a waste.
Senator Proxmire gives that Golden Fleece Award
to
scientists who are doing research that he can't understand.
One of the common ones was the hundreds of thousands they spent on whether a frisbee could be adapted to a military weapon.
Right. I think we could easily get off on this, what our tax monies are spent for, but that's not what I was hoping we could talk about this afternoon. I think what I'm concerned about is that we try to figure out whether there are indeed some people who are non-productive and therefore really not worth bothering about. See, I think that the groups we've listed probably
most of us would accept. Do you think it's okay to do something for the elderly? Something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like keep them alive. As long as we can.
Up to a point.
All right.
Or let her explain that.
Well, life support system in someone that's been a dying way or have too many chronic illnesses and why not let them go instead of put them on a respirator and using up the rest of the family inheritance for the last 2 weeks in the hospital.
Yeah, I agree with that entirely.
That was a very small family inheritance.
Really?
Longer stays in the hospital wipe out bigger inheritance.
Right, so I think that's probably a point. So you're not just talking about non-productive, you're talking about almost non-here.
In
terms of keeping a breath still in them, right? I think that most of us would agree with that.
Your support systems make money off of that.
I know, right? But
so
you're saying that's productive.
Out, those productive people are canceled out too.
Okay. All right.
They're the Walmart bureaucrats right there as soon as you wipe out their product.
I don't think any of us are suggesting that we have no life support systems. That's one of the greatest bits of progress that we've made in the last 20 years. Is this kind of thing, and I think in some cases it's certainly justified. There are all kinds of things, you know, the pacemakers and the kidney machines and so on and so forth enable people to resume some kind of life. And I think that's certainly a different situation. You weren't suggesting that we do away with all those, were you? No, I think that would be artificial to say, well, we're going to get rid of all that stuff, and, you know, that'll cut down our population, and then we won't have so many superfluous people.
I think you're really talking about death with dignity, aren't you?
I've forgotten what the question was.
Well, what we're trying to get at is whether we begrudge public support for elderly people, and you were pointing out that there comes a point at which it's better. I think you were saying it's better to let them go in peace than it is to keep the body physically alive.
Right. That's
what about these other cases of old people who are not terminal? Some of them have 15, 20 years perhaps still to go, but they're not going to produce anymore. They're never going to come back into the job market and produce anything for anybody else. They're just going to be a drain on the economy.
But people will make money off of them.
So what we perceive as a drain on the economy is somebody else's wealth that they're getting from that. Yes, that's a bookkeeping problem. It's still a drain on the economy. There are always some people who benefit from what hurts the overall economy. Just think how destructive a war is to an economy, and yet how many people in the short run benefit from it. People make money off of things which are bad for the whole community. So if these people are a drain on the economy, it's true, some people are making money off of them, but that means that other people are making even less money.
Yeah.
I wonder about the elderly people in your conversation about some people are willing to sit back and give up as soon as their working days are over. But certainly there are many, many opportunities for elderly people to be not productive in the sense that you are when you're working, but certainly there are opportunities for them to assist others who need help, like foster grandparents and things like this that are certainly going to make life better for somebody else. And I think this is a form of production. And I think that elderly people, if they wanted, well, I think it's like anybody else,
you make life what you want.
Okay, I think that's a really good point. You're bringing in another dimension here. You're saying that maybe producing isn't necessarily bringing home a paycheck. I'll buy that.
There's there's an ad up on the bulletin board here just right now looking for three retired people to come and work at Holden Village. So you're quite right, the opportunities are there.
I think part of what you might be getting at, seems to me, is that medical technology is improving the quality of life of older people tremendously. Take, for example, artificial knees and artificial hips that had condemned old people to a wheelchair for the rest of their life, but now they're able to get back up and walk. Coronary bypass surgery is another such example. Hemodialysis, artificial kidneys, and so forth. But these technologies are becoming increasingly more expensive.
Right.
And there comes a point in time when it appears to me that probably a trade-off is going to have to be made. Is one person going to have an artificial hip, or are we going to, say, provide that money to vaccinate 1,000 children? So they will get polio.
I think
you know, there's going to, perhaps, it would be nice to do everything, but there probably is not going to be.
But we're probably going to have to make that. Some rather hard decisions. Paul had an aunt who had a cataract, I believe, and she said her doctor told her it wasn't worthwhile to have the operation because she was 85, I think. I think she was 85 when she told us about this. And I thought, well, who's he to decide whether it's worth it or not? What kind of decision making is that? Who knows how much longer she was going to want to be able to see? I find that kind of decision making very difficult, and I find it even more difficult since I recently saw some statistics which indicated that the greatest increase in percentage, the decade of greatest increase in percentage of years is
the population.
Of the whole population, right, is the over 80s. Now that gave me pause. If the over 80s are increasing faster than anybody else, we may have to revise our whole idea of what's old. You know, if you're not old when you're over 80, when are you going to be old? And I think what you're saying is right. The only problem I have with that is that throughout history, it seems to me, we've said there's only this big a pie, and we have to decide how we're going to divide it up. Well, I'm here to tell you that the reason most of us are here is that it turned out that the pie was a lot bigger and a lot more proliferating than we thought. See, we're just not living on the same standard, the same anything that our parents, much less our grandparents, were living on. And that goes in terms of life expectancy as well as a whole lot of other things. So I think what we're saying here is that it's going to be very, very difficult for us to say who are going to be these superfluous people. I mean, would we really say, okay, well, the cutoff point is going to be 100. After that, just don't ask for any more of this highfalutin medical aid because it's too expensive and you had your chance and now we're going to give it to somebody else. Well, I don't think we're going to do that, for one thing, but I don't think most of us would be willing to do it either.
This has happened in Britain.
Well, we just come...
What's happened in Britain?
That they've had to make decisions about who gets what. We've just come from Britain. So we have some idea of what all that argument was about. And what the British are having a hard time with is very, very expensive things like what are some of these new open heart surgery and some of those kinds of things. And they're trying to decide whether all hospitals should be equipped with this very fancy stuff, or whether they should have some of that in certain places. They haven't yet got to the point of saying we're going to cut off the giving of these artificial aids at a certain age. They've not yet done that. And I don't, even if the British do, I think we'd have a very hard time with it. Well, anyway, so that's one kind, though, of.
They have a socialistic, much more socialistic system than we have. Aren't we discounting entirely the fact that it sounds to me like we expect the government's going to take care of all of us? You know?
We know that's not true, don't we?
Right.
We certainly know that.
The government can't take care of all, or the government won't have to take care of all, too. But what about, you know, the people that can afford?
Well, the biggest difference, I think, between the British and American medical care for elderly people is that the British provide a lot of that medical care, as you say, through their socialized medicine. And we have our government, instead of providing the medical care, we have our government provide the medical insurance and the payments for it.
So not yet, we don't.
For old people.
Oh, yeah. You mean like Medicare?
Yeah.
Yeah.
For old people, we do. And one of the big differences then is how rich the doctors can get.
Well, right, I hope now the level of that aid too is somewhat limited in terms of treatment of acute problems and so on, so that the prices being what they are in medical field, which is a picture of inflation at higher rates than the average of goods and services in our economy, is such that soon the levels of benefits that are available are going to be inadequate and more and more and more so unless some other sort of adjustment. So we're into a very, very grim economic picture in that area in our society. We're going to be forced constantly, I think, to be looking at that problem and doing something.
Even within the Medicare system, the elderly are priced out of it, because the system determines what's a fair price. And then the recipients of the medical aid have to make up the difference. And sometimes they're unable to do that.
Yeah, I think...
So it's a joke. You know?
Right. I think from my experience, if you look at the United States effort at socialized medicine, which indeed picks out certain favored groups, like the military, or the British system, which doesn't make an effort to pick out certain favored groups, I think the British do better, without nearly as much resource. In other words, they're not nearly as rich as we are, and it seems to me they spread it out better. However, I didn't want to get all bogged down in this medical stuff, but I think we're beginning to see that we're going to have to make some hard choices, as this gentleman says. Now, if it's a question of keeping an old person alive or vaccinating several dozen children, are we going to have to make that kind of decision? Are we going to say, well, on the one hand, you're superfluous if you're old, or on the other hand, you're superfluous if you're young because you haven't had a chance to produce anything yet, and really, we've got too many children already.
Just develop a good curve and then maintain a curve.
Could you expand that a little?
Well, if you got too many old folks, so the curve is skewed that way, then let them die. And if you got too many kids, boy, then let them die. Just to maintain a good curve throughout the whole thing.
Boy, that's a long way from
there,
isn't
it? You hear the echo of Swift. What is Swift?
Who
had a modest proposal for solving the problem of overpopulation, undernourishment. He said that the Irish could eat their babies. He said that attacks the problem both then. And quite horrified people, and said, I think you've got partly your tongue in cheek, haven't you? Well, let me throw in a little more just plain politics. on this, and that is that with this increasing number of older people in the population, their increasing vote, we can expect the public policy, the sense of government responsibility for older people to keep changing more in the direction that it has been going in. So if you're worried right now about government taking too much care of old people, I predict that by the time that World War II baby boom is old, well, most of us will happily be gone by then, but if any are still looking back, I think they'll really be horrified. The votes are going to be there. We already see it. I don't think, I can make a remark about the age of one of the candidates, which I won't mention. but that would that's certainly much easier given the current curve, and we can expect more of that in the future. And when I look around at some old people, believe me, there are a lot of old people around I'd much prefer in public office than a lot of young people I see. So that just suggesting that curve is a wave that's moving toward a bigger and bigger percentage of old people. And the World War II baby boom is going to make that hump in the old people has been very slow about having its own children. They've been putting off marriage for about 10 years. And so they're going to wind up not only with lots of them old, but with not very many of their children around to help them pay the bill. So you, those among you who are in my generation are going to sneak out just in time.
With a little bit left.
Yeah. Well, moving over to the economy again, it seems to me we are wanting to keep the economy we have, which is capitalist. And the capitalist system, as we know it right now, requires that there be so many unemployed. It is stated policy, in fact, economically, that we have 7, 8, 9% unemployed in order that we can, in quotes, recover economically. So we are saying that many people have to be unproductive, or our economy can't happen when we want it to. Therefore, seems to me we are obligated to see that those people can live because they are required for our economy so that we can live.
Joe, let me clarify one point there. I'm sure you understand that some of us have kicked these unemployment figures so often, so loosely, that we lose sight of it. That percentage figure you gave is not a percentage of the population being unproductive. You're talking about a percentage of the labor force itself being kept out of work. So it's not, there's much more than 6, 7, 8% of the population unemployed. When we add up all the students, all the retired people, all the handicapped people, all the very wealthy people who aren't working, that's a much higher percentage. But your percentage is of people who are in the labor force, who are ready, willing, and able to work, and who incidentally are working most of the time. They get cycled in and out. There's that marginal group that keep losing their jobs and regaining their jobs, so that they come in and out. But you're quite right, there are only enough slots for 94% of them or so right now. We're gonna try to talk about this some more in one of our other sessions this week when we talk about Christianity and capitalism. I think we'll try and pursue that. Maybe we'll get you back to help us with that.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. What we've been trying to do so far this time is not to consider people who we normally think are employed part of the time are certainly employable. Employable is a really strange kind of concept. But what we've been trying to talk about are people who are perhaps not employable. And we're trying to figure out who those people are and really, what are we going to do about them? What ought we to be doing about them? Or what are we doing about them? And who are they? let's get off old people for a while, because I wanted to move on to some other groups who are, if anything, a bigger problem, because they're going to be around longer. This lady here, I'm sorry, I don't know your name, suggests handicapped people. Now, who do you think of when you think of handicapped? Who are the handicapped?
Mentally retarded,
right.
How many were on the verge of saying that? My first thought was blind, and my second thought is physically disabled in other ways.
So then there are several kinds of handicaps, right? Which may make a person unemployable. But to take your example of mentally retarded, now see, for years we thought mentally retarded meant an IQ below such and such, right? And what we did, and yeah, I think with good intentions, put these people, either they stayed at home and their families took care of them and sort of kept them out of the way, or we institutionalized them, right? Florida had, when we came to Florida 28 years ago, I believe there were two institutions for mentally retarded people in the whole state. And then there was this great proliferation, and I don't know, now there are five or six or seven. But what's happened in the meantime is that there's been really a great deal of study, of research, of experimenting, and what do you know? A lot of those mentally retarded people are employable and employed. And they're doing jobs. Now this took, I thought of that when you were poking fun at the research. See, I think all research isn't a disaster, because that's exactly what happened. The Kennedys came into the White House, and suddenly being mentally retarded wasn't something that you had to hide in the closet. And a lot of people got very interested in it. And now there are whole departments in universities to deal with questions of special education and all these kinds of things. So that,
I mean, just to add, for those of you who don't remember, that she's not making a slur there on the president, but reminding us that the president had a retarded sister.
Right, I skipped over that little item. Good point. So there are now not just institutions. In fact, the institutions that were built so happily and with such gay abandon in the 50s are being emptied out, and we have halfway houses and foster homes.
Workshop.
I beg your pardon?
Opportunity
workshop. A whole battery of ways of not just taking care of the mentally retarded anymore. See, that used to be the thing. It used to be just custodial. Now we're saying, no, these people can be trained to do things. Some of them can. They can be trained to live on their own. They can be trained to take care of themselves. And all of a sudden, they're not superfluous anymore. That we've got a lot of jobs in our society that don't need a lot of brains. And
I've got one.
They haven't. Yeah.
I don't think the public is too adamant about supporting these people. The groups that I worry about, and I think about, I shouldn't say worry about, but I think about quite often, are the colored, are Native Americans, where we talk about a 9 or 10% unemployment rate. The colored person in the Native American reaches what, 25, 30, 40%?
In some age groups.
Right.
What do you do about
that? Especially the young ones.
Yeah. Now again, that percentage is not a figure of the total population, the total black population.
No, but it's the total of the employable.
That's right, of the ones who are looking for work.
Yeah.
There are a lot more who just have given up looking, and we don't count them anymore. They don't figure
right.
The percentage.
But these are the people,
yeah.
I think, that we're reluctant to do something about as taxpayers. I don't know what you can do, but this is, to me, is a far more...
Yeah, now is your point that the nation doesn't do anything for them, or they don't do anything for themselves, or I'm trying to figure out.
I don't know. I really don't know who doesn't do something for them, whether it's themselves, whether it's us as a nation, whether I don't know what it is. Why are they? Why is there this group, this large group that can't find productive work? Is it? I don't know whether it's them or whether it's us or whether it's a combination of both or what. But what in the world do you do about this group?
Well, there have certainly been some efforts, some governmental programs designed specifically for what you're calling this group, young blacks. Some of you who work for the state, you know about some of these programs. Like there's one called WIN and
Hardcore.
What is it?
Hardcore.
Well, can you explain to that man a little bit about
well,
how they?
To me too.
Well, I know about these programs, but they don't appear to be working.
Right.
Okay, all right. Now, see, what I think we're saying is that we're looking for something that works, but somehow we expect this to come from a welfare department, maybe a private group. I think the Lutheran Church does some of these things. We really expect something outside the rest of the economic system to clue in on those particular people, don't we?
What do you mean when you say outside the economic system? I don't
well, I'm saying that we're reluctant to look at the failure of the schools, of our capitalist economy, of industry, of whatever. We're just not clued into thinking on a wider spectrum. We want to see a program work, and I suggest that's the problem. How can a program work when you're talking about deficiencies in nutrition, housing, education, industry,
character building?
Okay, all those things go together, you see. And then somehow, some program is supposed to set all that right.
Now tell me this, am I just imagining this, or is it not the case in your community, as I think it is in mine, that a large number of us think it's these people's own fault? That a large number of us think, especially with regard to the blacks in the South, that may mean especially with regard to people from Mexican families in California, I don't know. But isn't there kind of a general feeling that it's their own fault, and that they would just behave like we do, like we taught our kids to, they could get jobs? Is that not a... am I making that up, or is that a...
Well, I think you
got to
clarify that, whether it's from whole or part. You know, I don't think there's very many people who think it is totally 100% their fault that they're...